Thank you.
So Mike, I'll give a talk on the board. So I'm talking about four-dimensional gravity from four-dimensional conformal field theory, which is just a reinvestigation on my part of the RS2 mechanism for gravity localization in extra dimensions and its ADS-CFT interpretation. In the words of an old UB40 tune, something been bugging me for a mighty long time. So I've only just sort of found out how to phrase what's been bothering me, and that's what I want to present. And then I want to present my new proposal, and I wanted to at least, I was very pleased that I get a chance to run it by some of the experts in this audience, okay? So I either come out understanding it better or understanding the error of my ways. Okay, so basically the outline of the talk is this. I want to sort of quickly review very fast the salient features of RS2 and its ADS-CFT interpretation as things stand, okay? Then I want to pose a puzzle for the standard interpretation, and then I want to propose a resolution, and then make some concluding remarks. Okay. So to just start with an introduction, recall that there are basically two ways that we understand how four-dimensional theories emerge from higher dimensional theories, either by compactification, okay, or by localization onto some four-dimensional surface in the higher dimensions. Okay, so for gravity, localizing gravity, that seems at first sight quite counterintuitive. And just to remind you why, if this is the extra dimension and we're trying to localize gravity to some four-dimensional or 3+1-dimensional space, localizing means, say, the graviton wave function does that, then it is a little bit counterintuitive, because we expect gravity, the four-dimensional graviton, should couple to all forms of energy, even the energy way out here where the tail of the wave function is really dying. Okay, so that's at first sight counterintuitive, and you might think that you couldn't do it. The RS2 mechanism shows how it can be done within effective field theory, and Lisa and I in that paper argued why the mechanism was robust against any UV completion of our five-dimensional effective field theory. Okay. By which I mean adding, you know, solving the non-renormalizability of the theory by adding extra massive states. Okay, that's just what I mean. So recall that the way this looked was that in RS2 consisted of five-dimensional, the effective field theory consisted of five-dimensional general relativity plus a three-brain, okay, sort of the minimal ingredients to even get going, and the vacuum solution to Einstein's equations in the setup looked like this, okay, just a standard warped metric, where these are the usual four dimensions, and it is the Minkowski metric, and the sort of cusp or kink in the geometry was due to the three-brain stress energy, and the fact that it was away from the brain looked like pieces of ADS was due to the five-dimensional negative cosmological constant that we had there. Okay, so the localized zero modes, the localized gravity, four-dimensional gravity, just came from replacing eta mu nu by a general four-dimensional metric, and it turned out this parameterized the localized four-dimensional zero modes. Okay. So it was easy, in some sense, to get the localized zero modes. The two non-trivial facts are that when you computed the four-dimensional effective Planck mass, okay, then the only reason you got a finite answer, that is to say an interacting theory, was because of the warp factor, okay, allowing that to converge. And we argued, okay, I think that's the best thing we could say about that, is that we argued that all of the massive modes needed to, that presumably they are in any stringy completion, that all of those heavy modes, as well as all of the non-zero modes, this is just the zero mode of the solution, all of the non-zero modes, we argued, would not show up in low energy experiments, so that they decoupled. Okay. Nevertheless, I think the effective field theory understanding, okay, to make everything really watertight, just from an effective field theory perspective, at least to me, was still left in a certain state of mystery when all of a sudden the ADS-CFT interpretation of these things seemed to clarify everything, okay? And in some sense came to the rescue. So the ADS-CFT interpretation, once made, seems almost very simple. And that is, it not only gave an interpretation of sort of the mysterious findings in RS2, but also in some sense partially a UV completion, okay? And so, or at least the road to a UV completion. So what it said was that the non-zero modes of gravity, of the five-dimensional general relativity, plus whatever stringy excitations and so on there are, these, remember, are some subset, if you go far enough away from the brain, they're just some subset of the modes you would find in exact ADS, okay, in an exactly ADS vacuum. And so this was basically said to be dual in the ADS-CFT sense. So you'll see that I'm doing it at a very rough level here. To a four-dimensional CFT with a UV cutoff, okay? And that in some sense, the four-dimensional zero mode graviton, so the four-dimensional general relativity that was localized, in some sense went for the ride. Okay, now this duality is highly non-trivial, but we know that the four-dimensional localized zero mode, if you like, at low energies would couple just by general covariance, has to couple in the usual good old-fashioned way to this four-dimensional CFT. Okay, so RS2 was basically, I think seemingly quite convincingly, said to be dual to this setup. And what it left for the string theorists to do, therefore, is to supply, if you like, the UV cutoff, okay, to realize RS2 within string theory.
I'm trying to remember what it is. Isn't the cutoff at the ADS radius scale rather than the string scale?
No. From the view of the CFT?
Yep.
No, I would say as long as you don't put any very small string coupling in or anything like that, I would say it's just at the Planck scale.
I think that's how
or if you want, let me say it in this language. If I say that the four-dimensional GR has some Newton's constant, then where would you think the UV cutoff is?
Well, okay, you become sensitive to all the excitations of the CFT.
That's right.
At the
right at zero.
Well,
this is RS2, so right at nothing, you're...
Okay.
You're not very sensitive to them because if you're the standard model somewhere added here, just for fun, then you could here I am, standard model guy, produce a couple of gravitons, goes into CFT mush, but this is a highly suppressed process through gravity at low energies.
That's right, but that becomes important at the ADS radius scale.
In terms of say the four-dimensional Planck scale, what scale are you talking about?
So that could be a much lower scale if you have a large ADS radius.
Just in terms of parameter of this model, what would you say?
Well, okay, the usual thing you do is you set M4 equals 1 over R, roughly, that everything's at the same scale.
What's R?
The radius.
The radius, yeah.
Yeah, you take the ADS radius and the Planck scale.
Roughly the same.
Roughly the same. But you could take the radius to be much bigger. And if so, I think that you get into the regime where...
Then I agree with you.
Okay, the conformal field theory processes are important at medium radius. But then I guess you say you could follow it then in the conformal field theory.
Yeah, in this description, you have exactly all of the...
Higher energy, and you're interested in the ultraviolet cutoff at that.
Right. In that sense, this provides more of a UV completion, even without telling you what this UV cutoff is here.
Yeah.
I already, by telling you the CFT, I've already told you more about the high energy physics than I would have known just in IRIS 2. Okay. So, so the work in this direction, I don't know, I trace it back to the paper that I could actually understand all of by... That's just a statement about me. The early paper by Verlinde and Chan, Paul, Verlinde. These are, in some sense, the ones that I have managed to keep track of. Giddings, Kutcher. Okay. Have investigated either in RS1 or RS2 contexts various stringy aspects of this kind of stuff, as well as other things that they were interested in. Okay, what I wanted to say about this by way of introduction was this, that this is very nice. In a sense, you understand everything by looking at both sides. And each side makes manifest things that are mysterious on the other side of this duality. Let me just be clear. In RS2, the extra dimension is manifest because you put it in there as part of your effective field theory degrees of freedom. On the other hand, the localized gravity and its subsequent decoupling from everything else at low energies is a bit of a surprise. Okay. On the other hand, on this side of the duality, the four-dimensional general relativity and its low energy decoupling are totally obvious. On the other hand, the ADS CFT creating for you the extra dimension is a surprise and still sort of mysterious. Okay. Here's what was bothering me all this time. Okay. And I was never sure if it was just more than empty formalism. And that is this, that in RS2, the zero mode graviton and all the non-zero modes, however you want to write that, are sort of, at least the general relativistic non-zero modes, are all unified in the same object, okay, the five-dimensional gravity. On the other hand, over here, the non-zero modes reside here. The zero mode is just this thing tacked on, and with its completely, you know, it's the UV cutoff is only needed because of this guy. This is a perfectly good theory by itself. And all the details of its UV cutoff are, in some sense, separate, okay, logically. And the question is this apparent unification of these modes pure formalism, where sometimes things are, you can just make things look like they're unified, but they're not, or is there something to it, okay? And I want to basically argue that there's something to it, okay? And in fact, that under certain circumstances, which I will specify in a second, RS2 should really be interpreted as inside of CFT, but no gravity, okay? No fundamental gravity in the theory. So the CFT is just flat space, garden variety, conformal field theory, and RS2 is sitting inside as a little phenomenon you can get going in there. That's what I want to argue. And notice, if this is true, then RS2, which normally, even if you did this dual version, you'd still have to supply this cutoff. Okay, you still have more to say if you really want to define the theory in the ultraviolet. If this is true, when you know this CFT, you're done. Okay, you don't need to do any more string theory or anything. You've got that. Okay. So I think it's interesting, which is at least part of my task, and I hope to argue that it's correct. Okay.
So.
Say again.
You're saying RS2 is equivalent to 4D CFT.
No. I've written this subset, and I'll be very careful about what I mean. So you'll have to wait for that. And if I had said equality, I would have been making a big mistake. So I'll have to spell out what I'm going to be talking about. But what I want to say is missing, that you can understand already at this level, is that I'm not adding general relativity by hand. It's truly a flat space theory, okay?
Robert,
yes?
This thing you wrote down here, this is a CFT without a UV cutoff?
Yeah, without a UV cutoff. Yeah, okay. Okay, so what I want to do it in two stages, because I want to pose a puzzle, and I want at least to see that everybody is as puzzled as me, and then I want to pose the resolution that I have in mind. Okay. Okay. So first of all, I said that to say this is wrong in any sense, it's not always wrong. I have to sort of qualify what type of RS2 setup has these properties that I'm now discussing. And even that I'm not very good at saying precisely, okay, but basically even in RS2, we already had sort of two cases in mind. One is the case where the Planck brain is sort of a boundary of space-time, okay? And the other is that the Planck brain is actually a fluctuating defect. Okay. And in a sense, this is what the string theorists so far have realized, okay? Although their boundary, ours was just some simple orbital boundary conditions, are more complex than that. But basically, the Planck brain is always a special place in the five dimensions. It's really the edge of the space-time. Here, you're really imagining it just like one would imagine a string or something, okay, fluctuating in the middle of space-time. Okay, so I'm going to be talking about this case, which in some sense got a paragraph's worth in RS2, just because this is technically easier. Okay, but I'm going to be talking about this.
So that means you're having in mind that you can go to the other side and it's different? You don't have a Z2 symmetry?
I don't have a Z2 symmetry.
But you have two sides.
I have two sides, yes.
So it's a
two
domain
sides.
Wall-like.
It's a domain wall-like thing.
Which no one has really realized yet.
No, no.
From some micro.
Exactly. Exactly. That's right. Okay. And even this distinction that I'm making has some qualifiers, but I won't talk. I mean, let's just go with this picture that at least we have some intuition for, and let me try and make it more precise.
Could I also ask you, probably sticking just to a point like an effort to delta function source?
I'm going to deviate that from there, although in a sense, technically, that's what I want to talk about. But in terms of at least getting everybody's intuition as to what type of brain I mean, I'm actually going to deviate from that, invoke some of your work in a lower dimension, just to flesh out what I mean, okay? Just so that everybody has this puzzle that I have, and then I can say how I propose to solve it.
Is okay. It critical for the puzzle to take the second point of view? Because there may be some sense in which...
That's dead right. So I'm not sure, and that's why I want to talk to people like you. But
because the only difference is a ghost on mode in this case, right?
Right. I mean, and even that, my quick investigation, as I said, at the time of this talk, you should say that I've made a reconnaissance. So with sort of 90% confidence, although somebody in this audience may know right off the top of their head, if you look at the spectrum here, it's not like you find the physical spectrum of this two-sided model. I don't think you find a massless scalar degree of freedom. Okay, you can find it in the action if you look. Okay, I'll write down an action where you'll see, okay, there's a fluctuating mode. But as a physical degree of freedom, I don't think it survives. I think it's eaten up. That's not crucial for anything I'm going to say, but I believe what I say is true.
Is it still going to be true that you have two horizons on either side?
Yes, that's still going to be true.
So but if it fluctuates away from the point where the space turns around,
yeah.
Does that mean there's two things? Both the usual place that marks the place where the warp factor turns around and also the brain? Or will the turnaround follow the brain?
I mean, in a sense, eventually it will. So off the top of my head, for example, if I'm talking about the gravitational field of this piece of chalk, then there's something complicated that happens if I sort of go like that very fast. Of course, eventually, you know, it drags its static field with it. And in between, I'm fuzzy. Okay. There's definitely a tension on the brain, and that discontinuity has to follow
still,
it around.
It's still the source.
It's still the source.
Even though there's no Z2.
Yeah. Okay. So what action do I have in mind? So let me start in this thin wall limit, okay, where the action is simply m5 cubed, the five-dimensional Planck mass cubed, integral d5x, square root of minus g. So this is just general relativity with a, in sort of RS conventions, negative cosmological constant. Okay, k is just the ADS radius curvature inverse. And then there is a brain tension, which when fine-tuned to get Poincaré invariance in the RS model, has this magnitude. And then G is the induced four-dimensional metric on the brain, which you can write out in terms of the brain embedding parameterization, but I won't. Okay, so that's the type of theory I'm talking about. Those are the things that I'm going to use to solve equations of motion and so on. Okay, but in order to, and I can tell my story just with this, but in order, as I said, to get everybody thinking exactly the same way that puzzled me, I want to think of a slightly thickened version of this story where this brain is realized as a field theory domain wall.
Does the brain have negative tension?
No, this is the positive tension brain. In RS2, the Planck brain basically has positive tension. Okay. So it's okay for me to be writing this, okay, as far as we know. Okay, so really, I'm going to just get to this action as the effective action from a theory which really this looks like. So this m5 cubed is a nuisance. I pull it out all the time. So just starting from a purely five-dimensional action where I have a four-dimensional gravity with five-dimensional gravity, five-dimensional negative cosmological constant, plus now I'm adding just a scalar. No attempt is being made at supersymmetry here, but this goes into the grab bag of things that have to be talked about at the end. Plus a potential, since I can just draw what I want, I'm going to draw a potential that looks like this. This is zero, okay? And I've just explicitly added that there, okay? So it's ADS on either side, okay? Okay, so that's the game plan. And of course, in the thin wall limit, there are some parameters here in the potential where the thickness of this, maybe I'm jumping too fast, okay. So first of all, this thing does support a domain wall solution, okay? And therefore, you can get a domain wall which has a certain thickness now, finite thickness, that you can get out of this from the parameters of this potential. And I'll call that thickness L, okay? So when L is much smaller than the ADS radius, et cetera, it's natural to study instead this effective thin wall limit, okay? But to just think about the puzzle, can we just talk about this theory, okay? It has a domain wall solution, and if I do various fine tunings of the parameters of the potential, I find a smoothed out RS2 setup, okay? So what we have then is, you know, in RS2, the exponent in the warp factor does, you know, I don't know, this or something. And now things get smoothed out a little bit over a scale L, which, however, I'm taking to be much smaller than the ADS radius and so on. Okay.
Maybe just a comment, as you well know, right? If you tune this potential, for example, the Z2 symmetric example.
Right.
It really arrived as a supergravity wall. It fixed superpotential.
Right.
Its natural setup.
Right.
Get all those things working, including the tuning of potential.
In fact, what I wanted to say, therefore, again, I need to, there are various people I have to talk to afterwards, but the thing that I understand that I can get from supersymmetry is if I drop one dimension, Miriam, Griffiths, and Ray, for example, studied three real domain walls in four dimensions and showed, I mean, there really are supergravity theories with these types of potentials, and these are really BPS brains, and, you know, there are good things like positive energy theorems and stuff like that. Okay, so whether that goes through in five dimensions actually may not be entirely necessary for what I'm about to say, this absolute stability of these domain walls, but let's just presume so, okay? And I can come back to this.
Maybe I should also comment that recently Klaus Behrendt and Gianguido Delgado were looking at gate supergravities in five dimensions.
Right.
Special gauging, and they managed to get the Randall-Sundin-Pick solution.
Without the singularities?
Without singularity.
Okay.
So there is actually a realization even in five dimensions.
Okay, then I'm even happier.
What one has been searching for quite a while.
Right, I know, yeah. Right, right.
It's probably a Chan-Paul-Gerlinde type realization of this kind of thing, too, where you have two stacks of three brains in an otherwise compact manifold, and then you have two ADS throats with a, you know, yeah. IDO in the middle.
You see, it's not totally clear to me whether what I'm about to say doesn't apply to that type of thing, okay? So let me keep going on this very simple tale with this scalar theory and say that, look, here is the story, okay? This theory does have a smoothed RS2 brain, and it has smoothed, I mean, you know, the wave function of the localized graviton is also there. There is a localized graviton. Its wave function is now a little smoothed, but so what, okay? There is another solution to the field equations here, okay? The other solution is the trivial vacuum. So there is a solution which looks like phi. Let me say that this is V, okay? The two possible vacua are V or minus V. So phi equals, say, plus V, and the metric equals, say, pure ADS. This trivial vacuum is also, obviously, a solution to this field equations, okay? Now, let's talk about this thing, okay? Suppose, as I always have to presume when I write down effective field theories like this, suppose that this theory with this Lagrangian expanded around this vacuum has a string theoretic UV completion, okay? In other words, I'm talking about something sensible. Then, by the ADS-CFT conjecture, belief, whatever, okay, I believe it, that theory should be dual to some four-dimensional CFT, okay? So I'm going to call that CFT-X, okay? We'd all love to know what it is. Okay, so to be clear, it's the CFT which is dual to exactly ADS vacuum theory. With this, this is the light particle content, and then there may be some stringy excitations and so on and so on. Okay.
You're talking about the two-sided throat? The
two-sided no, throat? No, no, no. No, this is the trivial. No, yeah, this is exact ADS. Okay. Now, here is the puzzle, okay, just as this little fairy tale goes. Somebody hands you, as an experimentalist, like all of us here, they hand you this CFT system. And they said, here it is, okay, go experiment on this. So you play with all your local probes and you do all sorts of things to the system and you discover it's a conformal field theory. And you work very hard and you discover all the properties of this conformal field theory and you figure out what conformal field theory this is, okay? It's conformal field theory X, now you know. Then you put on your, you know, your Maldacena hat and then you say, what is the dictionary? What is... This seems to be some weird large N conformal field theory. What is the ADS dual of this conformal field theory? And you figure it out. It's given by some string theory, and you work out the low energy effective field theory, and this is what It is expanded about this vacuum, of course. Okay.
So you may just get only perturbative expansion around this V of F.
You can get large fluctuations by doing all possible local experiments. You can explore locally all of the minima of this thing locally. In fact, maybe I should have said that. What's crucial in the assumption I make about what type of brain am I talking about? I'm talking about a brain where you can, by local processes, excite bubbles of the brain. Okay, that's going to be crucial in what I'm about to say. That's the type of brain to which this talk refers. Okay, so yes, this is the type, you know, these domain walls, yeah, you can excite little local bubbles of this stuff and play with it. Okay. So, no, I claim by doing all possible experiments on the CFT, you will get to realize this Lagrangian. Okay? And once you realize this Lagrangian, as a theorist, it's expanding. Of course, you're discovering it, and you say the vacuum is this. Of course, the vacuum is this. But as a mathematician, you can look at this Lagrangian and notice that it has another vacuum, okay, which is the RS2 vacuum. Okay, there's the domain wall. Yes?
I should probably let you finish your sentence, but I mean, it seems to me that what's always been crucial about the ADS CFT is the boundary conditions. So as long as you assume asymptotic ADS boundary conditions...
The whole talk is actually about that, so I'll get to that.
That is the one thing
right.
That you're...
But that's why I say, as a mathematician, you don't have to think about whether the system you're realizing, where the one you actually have experimental access to is the one with ADS asymptotics, right? And you're just realizing little bubbles of stuff and figuring out the Lagrangian, but only as a mathematician looking at the Lagrangian can you imagine this other possibility, which is RS2. Try as you might to realize it in the CFT, you can't, because as an experimentalist, because it is a different superselection sector. Okay, I think that's the point you're making. This is a different superselection sector, and so you can only imagine it. You can't, apparently, you can't produce it in your lab, although if you want to know anything about it, about RS2 with its UV completion, with string theory, et cetera, et cetera, the information is somehow there. You can figure out what the string theory excitations on this Lagrangian are just by studying every possible thing, you know, operators of high anomalous dimension in the conformal field theory, etc. You get to know everything about the action, if you like. Okay.
Why is that clear? Because as Gary was just saying, you in the ADS-CFT, you're fixing the boundary conditions.
Right.
And theories, as you said, theories with different boundary conditions are in different superselection sectors.
Right.
And the definition of a superselection sector is that there's no operator that takes you from one to the other.
Right.
So I don't see why it's clear that you can really probe the physics.
When you say probe, do you mean experimentally or just as a mathematician writing down solutions to this field equation?
Writing down experimentally.
I agree with you completely experimentally. In fact, that's the puzzle. Why is it that experimentally, having access to this vacuum, I cannot realize RS2? It's in a different superselection sector. End of story. But since I know, I don't know, I'm slightly misrepresenting how string theory is written nowadays, but I know the action, okay, plus stringy terms.
The low-energy effective action isn't all of string theory.
I agree. So that's why I'm slightly misrepresenting it. So let me, to dot my I's and cross my T's, imagine that in the dot, dot, dot here, I was going to write the string field theory version of the rest of this tale. Okay, so the dot, dot, dot.
But string field theory doesn't define anything. I mean, the only definition we have of this
is whatever comes out of the string theory.
Is the CFT.
Right, right. But suppose I know the CFT. Then, in principle, say I know how to do string theory on these backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. A strong mathematician is supposed to say this thing is some string theory on some weird background, and that on some weird background, namely this one at low energies, and now I have all the string theory amplitudes on this vacuum, right? And you ask me anything like, what's the mass of the first excited state not represented here? I can get it for you. How does it couple? I could get it for you. Basically by playing with all the amplitudes I can make out of the CFT. Would you agree with that? And so in some sense, by piecing it all together, that is the string field theory.
Is your argument that you can produce, you know, large but finite brains, you know, like spherical brains, bubbles?
Yes, yes.
And then, you know, that would still have the usual ADS asymptotics. So
well, that's the thing to check, and that's what I'm going to do. Yeah.
And then you say, well, locally, you know, a small part of the bubble should look like RS2, and then we should be good.
Right, right, right. So it's only the careful check of that that I'm about to do, which is fast, so I'm happy to.
But is it really going to locally look like RS2? Because, you know, to get something that looks like RS2, you've got, well.
Let me, I agree that it's not obvious. But that's the check I'm going to do. I'm going to show, I mean, there's some obvious challenges in doing this, or if you think about it, there are some obvious challenges in doing this. And so I have to show you that it can be done, because it's not totally obvious, okay?
I think the standard lore in string theory is that, say, n equals 4 gauge theory in 4 dimensions gives us a non-perturbative definition of string theory on ADS 5 plus S 5.
Right.
It does not give us a non-perturbative definition of ADS in any way that we know of. Of string theory on ADS 3 across S 3 across T 4 or something, or K 3 or something. So
can I actually can
saying,
I ask?
What you're saying is equivalent to the assertion that once we have one non-perturbative definition of string theory on one of these,
we'd know every other ground state there was.
We know every other ground state, and I don't think we. That's certainly not true in any practical sense, and whether it's even technically true is certainly open to question.
So you don't believe that string theory dynamics are actually unique in that sense? That
I personally don't believe. I mean, you're asserting that we already have a complete non-perturbative definition of string theory in every situation.
Yes, I am assuming. That's the mathematician looking at this thing here. Okay.
So I don't think anybody would assert that.
Okay.
I think the idea of holography is that the theory you get, the holographic dual, depends crucially on the boundary conditions.
Right.
And that's why we're all unhappy with, you know, the way things are now. We have different theories as non-perturbative definitions for different boundary conditions, and we need something better, which sort of puts it all on
right.
the same footing.
Can I say that all of these points, which I would actually like to think about, point in the following direction. Okay, they have to do with the following thing. Everybody would agree that I would at least perhaps get the supergravity approximation, or without the super, maybe, the gravity approximation that I'm writing down here. So I don't know all these massive states, right? And if I just look at this, I see that if I just truncated, right, then I would see that, oh, okay, RS2 is a solution, okay? But now I'd have to worry whether at some quantum level, perhaps, the excited string states, which you say I don't know about in the RS2 vacuum, because I know about string theory on the ADS5 vacuum, I don't know about it in the RS2 vacuum, maybe loops of the excited states, et cetera, somehow destabilize the RS2 vacuum. The main thing I need is, to continue, is that there is this RS2 vacuum in the same theory. Okay. So, point taken. I actually want to give this talk so I can understand any flaws in my logic. But basically, the puzzle, okay, to the extent that you agree with me that it's a puzzle, is I have this vague feeling, at least, that the CFT defines string theory on a certain background, that string theory, at least in the hopes of many, is connected from one vacuum to the other, okay? That in some sense you can learn about the properties of one vacuum from the other. I'm going to actually propose a very definite way to do that, so you can actually, in the particular instance at hand, okay? So I don't have to go through some broad statement about all string theory vacua and their connectedness, okay? So let me do that, okay? But this is the puzzle for me had been, in what sense could RS2 be sitting inside a purely conformal field theory, namely something with this sort of asymptotics? Okay. So that's what I want to realize. Okay. So let me do that. And
but again, if this is the complete description of the string theory, then probably what happens is if you can make something that looks like RS2 or other vacuous and wonderful IDS throats, then that's going to be just a different conformal field theory. So what's breaking down is the description of string theory is given by that conformal field theory.
I'm going to show you what I think is a state inside this conformal field theory.
Which looks like RS2.
Which looks like RS2 in that bubble-like sense, okay?
It's unstable, right?
But it's unstable, right? And that's going to have to be there's going to be some catch in saying that there's a gravitating theory inside a flat space CFT. There's got to be some catch. What I think is exciting is that the catch doesn't have to be an experimental one, okay? We could be living inside the CFT. So, these matters aside, I have just a technical thing to show you. Let me show you that, and then I would like to understand this and see whether there's anything to it.
Well, could you maybe just, sure. I mean, maybe it's not relevant enough. But you see, we understand, I mean, we start with ADS and we can perturb it, get more general, and study the flows. So those are typically flows compatible with CTRL.
Yeah.
Those are different type of values. They look like that.
Yeah.
So here you are dealing with something very special. You're going across this boundary.
Yeah.
It's highly non-trivial.
Yes, it's highly, I agree.
So to me it's...
Okay, so I hope to show you why it's different from the kind of flows that you're thinking of and why I hope it is playing by a looser set of rules. Okay? In fact, I hope to show you that it must exist. Okay, there's
Ronald,
no. Yes.
Banks has argued in different contexts that you can't make bubbles large enough to see another vacuum because they look like black holes from the outside. I mean, have you checked, given the particular attention that you have, that the bubbles that you want to make are actually going to be ones that you can where you can experiment on the wall?
I've checked. See, what I'm going to do to show you a classical solution here is I'm going to show you some initial data. And then I'm going to argue, because I can't solve exactly, I can show you the initial data exactly. I'm going to argue about its subsequent time development. Now, at time zero, when I start, I don't see anything that at least I would recognize as a horizon.
Yeah, I'm just asking, is the total mass of the wall bigger than its radius?
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't even check that. But it wouldn't be hard to do. Okay. But you see, it's not. You shouldn't think of it as a stable object. What I'm about to show you. And I'll show you what the time scales involved are. Okay. So we're going to talk about it. Something unstable and RS2, which looks stable, they don't seem to match. So let me proceed, and I'll show you what I'm talking about. Okay. So let me do this. So everything I'm about to say, I can say with this theory, okay, with the scalar field, and talk about solutions to the field equations here. In the thin wall limit, they all turn out to be the same statement about this theory. So I don't know if people want to know how I'm thinking about this, they can ask, but I'll keep talking about this. But what I have in mind is really just solving this in a certain approximation. Okay. Okay. So, for reference, I just want to write down the trivial vacuum. Here, I almost wrote it. So, the trivial vacuum has phi equals that, and in global coordinates for ADS, which are more useful for keeping track of SO4 rotational symmetry, it looks like...
If you were trying to use a spherically symmetric description of ADS and match it through bubble...
Shell by shell,
vacuum,
yeah.
And then you want to see the matching conditions, what kind of solutions to get.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm going to use units where k equals 1, otherwise there'll be too many k's. Okay, so that explains why.
You want to write down the
Sorry, yes. So I'll call it d tau squared, okay, this sort of global time. Okay, so that's just for reference. And now I want to tell you about something that isn't that, okay? I want to tell you about a classical solution, which asymptotically may look like this, but is non-trivial inside, okay? So I can't write down the exact solution because I just don't know how to solve these equations that well. And I wish I could because there are some subtleties that I could check. But what I can do is I can tell you what are the initial conditions for the solution that I have in mind, okay? And so here I'm going to do that. So I'm going to take the brain initially to lie at rho naught, okay? So this is a bubble at radial distance rho naught. Okay. Now, in the scalar language, I could say it just as easily there. What I mean is that you are in the minus V vacuum in the inside, and you go over to the plus V vacuum on the outside, and I could even be specific about exactly how you went over, but this is the quick way to say it, okay, for what's going to matter. Okay. The second thing I'm going to tell you is, okay, you've got to give phase space, right? So I've got to tell you the P's and the Q's. So I'm going to say that basically the solution starts from rest, by which I mean, and if you wanted to keep the scalar field in the game, okay, or if you want the brain is not moving in these coordinates, okay? So that is the initial condition at tau equals 0 for the time derivatives. This is what the brain is doing. Now, in general relativity, you might say I'm missing one piece of information. What is the initial GMN? Okay, what is this? Well, I'm not just allowed to make it up. And that's because in general relativity, you have the initial value constraints. As you have in any gauge theory, you have to satisfy these initial value constraints. For example, just so you know what I'm talking about, in QED or electrodynamics, you'd have to satisfy Gauss law constraints. You can't just choose any old electric field at time zero. Okay. Similarly here, there are the Hamiltonian and momentum constraints. So what are these constraints? Okay. Well, basically, with this ansatz, okay, well, in fact, I'm going to choose an ansatz here for this metric, which is that it looks like e to the 2 sigma of rho plus 1, with a minus sign here, d tau squared plus e to the 2 sigma rho d omega squared. I should have said this, the omega is the line element or whatever on the unit 3-sphere, okay? The angular direction, in other words. So I'm going to choose this ansatz, and if I use this ansatz, there's only one non-trivial constraint, initial value constraint, and that constraint reads simply okay, and you can really do this in the case of, say, the scalar field. You would write it as there's, you know, if you were just doing a 5/4 potential or something, then you'd have something like this. Okay, but in this thin wall approximation that I'm using, it's just a delta function. The 2 came from the RS fine tuning. Tells you it must be at 2, okay? So I have to solve, I can't just choose any old sigma I want, I have to choose something compatible with this equation, okay? Fortunately, this can be solved exactly for the setup. So first we should just solve it without the delta functions and then match at rho 0, and the general solution is for sigma without the delta function, looks like a half log A
Schwarzschild outside, or is it something else? I would think it'd be A-Schwarzschild.
It may be, in fact. You tell me, since I haven't looked at A-Schwarzschild.
Well, without a symmetry, I don't recognize it.
It must be, right? Because it's something, right? I mean, it's like, it's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, wait. The question is whether, if it were A-D-S Schwarzschild, wouldn't something stay static?
Yeah.
See, I'm not solving all of Einstein's equations.
No, it's going to end, well, one thing.
Oh, but at long distance, it's going to be H.
Yeah, outside it looks like A-D-S Schwarzschild, okay. But then you come in and you've got your shell.
Right.
I would think that the, not the shell, but the grain goes through, you know, class.
Right. Right.
Maybe you're going to tell me that.
I am. Well, I'm at least going to speculate that that's what happens. Okay. But for a while it won't. That's the question. Yes.
Are you going to have localized zero mode on the assumption or?
Yes, a quasi-localized zero mode.
Quasi-localized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a zero.
Not a zero mode,
okay.
Because it's going to be a temporary. It's not a exact static solution. Right. Okay. So maybe that actually might answer Rafi's question about the, you were just asking, does it look like a black hole from the outside, given its mass?
Well, no, the crucial question is whether the, it's clear that by Virchow's theorem, it's going to look like A-D-S Schwarzschild
right.
outside of the
right.
shell. The question is whether the shell is inside the horizon or not.
Mm. Okay, that I agree, I just don't know. But that's a good thing I can check.
This shell also couples with a field phi, so it doesn't need to be Schwarzschild. I mean, if you have just...
Well, yeah, except it's almost this, for example, at least in this thin wall approximation, you couldn't tell the difference. So as long as that's a reasonable approximation, that should be fine. Okay, so that's the general solution, but what I really want to paste it to, so I insist on the interior at rho equals zero, at rho near zero, that the sigma goes like, or e to the 2 sigma goes like rho squared, okay? So that it looks like Minkowski, so that there's nothing singular going on at rho equals zero, where there is no source of anything. So that gives me some boundary conditions, and basically you have to paste two of these together, and so you have a step function. And maybe I should have, sorry for scrunching. Okay, so on the interior, basically, I'm forced to write essentially the pure ADS solution just because of this behavior near rho equals zero. And then I have to match derivatives and so on according to that equation, and then write the general solution outside. And by matching, I figure out what the A and the B are. And so the A is something. Here, let me write it down for a start. OK. So the picture of this thing is, If you just draw this shape, you'll see the following, okay? So let me draw that. So this is rho, and I guess I'll draw sigma. So if I'm drawing sigma that looks vaguely singular at rho equals zero, but basically, in order to emphasize the RS2 part, this thing looks like this. Where this is rho naught, this is like 3 rho naught over 2. Okay, yes.
Okay, so now I'm confused because I think what everyone is saying is correct. Outside the shell, Virchow's theorem tells us
right.
the solution has to be Schwarzschild.
Right.
ADS. Now, Schwarzschild ADS, the spheres monotonically increase from the horizon out to infinity. So if your shell is outside the horizon,
yes,
the spheres have to have radii which monotonically increase.
Right.
But the radii of your spheres is basically e to the 2 sigma.
Right.
Sigma is decreasing for a while.
So you say, therefore, it must be that the horizon is outside of the...
So in some sense, your shell must be well inside.
Inside this horizon.
Your shell's inside.
Okay. Now, I don't mind, as far as the RS2 part, I don't mind, although as far as the conclusion about the CFT, maybe I do. But let me see.
Sometimes you're in the other asymptotic region through the throat.
Yeah.
That's what you've got. Because that neck is the throat.
The far equal argument applies, and you can show that you must have started with singular initial conditions.
Ah. So, in fact, one of the things I needed to know is, can I create the state, right, by jiggling whatever I have locally? You're saying that just knowing this much, there's no way you could ever create the state.
Classically, he's a singularity.
I see. Okay. Let me tell you what I know about the state, and then we'll see. What does it mean? Okay. So basically, the behavior of this thing is as follows. Okay. Anywhere you can do this a little more precisely, but let me just say, since the formulas are on the board, obviously anything to the left here is an exact solution. It's exactly the trivial vacuum. Okay, so the statement I wanted to make is this region is static. If I didn't go in the thin wall limit, it would be very closely approximating a snapshot of a static solution, namely the trivial vacuum. Okay, this region, so choose some generous slice of order rho naught. Okay, this region in here is very closely approximating a wedge of RS2, okay, where you have to make the following identifications. In RS2, we used ordinary time. Okay, and so just this, y is equal to rho minus rho naught, so that the brain is at 0, and x is equal to e to the rho naught omega. And you can see that, I should put this in quotes, of course, the brain here is a sphere, and RS1, it's a plane, but locally, it looks the same, okay? So basically, locally here, there's this big wedge where RS2, where this bubble looks like RS2, okay? So it looks like, I don't care whether it's RS2, it looks like a exactly static solution locally, okay? And way out here, you can check again, it looks like asymptotic ADS. Okay.
It proceeds back to the boundary of ADS, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, so I mean, this is just, you just put a thing deep in ADS, whether it's singular or not singular. Doesn't that just mean you haven't left the confines of CFTS?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's not fair. Maybe the fact that I can only create it from an initial singularity.
And that's just some different state inside the dual field.
Well,
there.
I would.
Well, but even if you could, it would just be a thing. It doesn't change the fact that you have the boundary of ADS, which doesn't change the fact that it's still dual to this field theory. It's just a different state in the field theory.
I think the question, to me, I would like to argue, in fact, I would like to have argued that this is a state in the CFT. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have said that, because then I'm about to show you an interesting property of it. But I agree. It's crucial to know, actually, it's crucial to know whether, in fact, this is a state or it isn't.
As Gary says, you have left, though. You've changed to different boundary conditions, because you can go both with a thing, and then there's another ADS boundary at the other end.
Right.
Is it different boundary conditions, or is it a thermal state, right? So you don't really see anything. Well, you wouldn't see the bubble there. Causally, you would not know there was a brain there at all. Because it's all causally disconnected from your reading.
In particular, the whole ADS, the whole RS region is inside the horizon.
That's right. Right. Yeah. In fact, but I want to take the viewpoint. Well, I want to take two viewpoints. One is, I live here, or I'm just the four-dimensional I'm looking for four-dimensional zero modes that live here. Right, and that so that may kill my second thing, which is I wanted to argue that there is a state inside the CFT that is mimicking RS2, and maybe I should make the simple point about. Let me first say this business about where is RS2 hiding in this. Okay, this is not the RS2 solution. So let me first just say that. Okay, so there are these three regions I've shown you. First of all, one right here, which is just close to a static solution. This overlapping wedge here, which is also close to a the initial data are close to a static solution. Far out here, I'm close to a static solution. In here, I am not close to a static solution that I know. Okay, so I assume not a static solution. On the other hand, this region here looks like a wedge of RS2, and in order to localize gravity at least temporarily, okay, all I need, okay, this is or quasi-localized gravity, all I need is a finite thickness of RS2 where this behavior, where it looks locally like RS2, okay. So I just need this finite thickness in order to quasi-localize along the lines of Rubikov and Gregory and Siberiakov.
Really, see localization has to be thicker than the ADS radius or something.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and this is many. So this rho naught was my choice, and I took it to be many ADS radii, as many as you want. And so, but there's one difference between this and the GRS quasi-localization. They needed a sort of a, you know, to end the thickness of their good region, they had to have a negative tension object, okay? Something that stopped it being RS and made it something else. Here, the role of that, and of course that negative tension object was presumably very unstable. Here, the role of that in the solution is being played by this weird non-static behavior of my initial conditions. Yes.
It's a horizon. I think we know exactly what that solution is, and it's one of the things that have been. We had to talk about
it's this. It's a bag of gold, isn't it?
It's the bag of gold, exactly. So you have in your region, you go far from your brain,
right.
And you have a horizon.
Right.
And then it's the horizon of the Schwarzschild ADS metric, and you continue
through. Okay. So then, what I need to know is this. At least if I knew nothing, then I would say that there is some time scale over which I cannot count. Okay, even though this is static without this, this stuff, the rapid evolution of this, if at all, can approach my brain at the speed of light. Okay? But you're saying it doesn't? So I can count on this wedge being approximately RS forever?
Is there a disconnect here? I mean, you're not claiming this is a static. He's not claiming this is a static solution, right?
No, there's not a static.
You can't use Birkhoff's theorem to argue about this. And this is just some initial condition. And so that region out there is going to
be
involved.
Just need it to be very symmetric.
Okay. So, anyway, I'm not sure. I'm taking the conservative view, I think, that whatever the non-static behavior of this region is, it can only be approaching the brain at the speed of light. Okay.
No, I mean, we know exactly what the solution is.
And what does it do?
If you have a shell that has already crossed its own Schwarzschild radius,
right.
Inside the black hole.
Right. So and if I'm just...
It's on the other side.
It's on the other... This is the horizon.
Right. But the point is that the thing down here is a horizon, and it's not going to get... It's not going to... Crash into the shell.
Yeah, certainly it is the case that the motion of these objects has been completely worked out.
Right.
A group of Russians,
right.
Barty Guth and Guthers, Rathnation, completely studied the dynamics of bubbles and things like Schwarzschild ADLs.
Right.
So you can go look it up somewhere.
Okay.
I agree. I think that it looks very likely that the bubble is inside its own Schwarzschild.
Right.
Horizon,
right.
So it's irrelevant to the original CFT.
True. But what if I'm on? What if I? So. My point it would be that there is a four-dimensional quasi-localized zero mode, okay, quasi-zero mode, living on this brain, right? And the question is, from its vantage, which happens to be inside the horizon, I agree, can that mode live forever, or does this stuff sort of hit it at the speed of light, or at any other speed?
What is the future evolution? I think that's not, I mean, you should really think about that in part of the other asymptotic region, and probably in the other region,
there's not
the brain is falling into the black hole.
There isn't another asymptotic region. Again, it's a bag of gold. So you've got just a little piece of ABS in the middle.
Yes.
Okay, let me try and wrap it up, and then everybody can tell me what is going on. What was my attempt here is to say that in these coordinates, if I assumed that whatever was this rapidly evolving region, if that's what it is, were just approaching this brain at the speed of light, how long would it take? And the answer is, in the time natural to the RS2 observer, it would take a T star of order e to the rho naught. Okay, so for rho naught large, this could be an arbitrarily large time. And therefore, I can make this quasi-localized and long-living gravity as long-lived and close to RS2 as I wanted. Okay. Therefore, having done those checks, I thought, and I'd still like your input, that this would, in some sense, allow me to propose how quasi-localized gravity could be sitting inside a conformal field theory. If you can have quasi-localized gravity, okay, you evade the Weinberg-Witten theorem, saying that a flat space field theory will never show you a massless spin-2 pole, because the quasi-localized theory doesn't have a truly massless spin-2 pole in the Minkowski, in the four-dimensionally Poincaré invariant vacuum. Okay, that's the idea. Okay, that the way you realize a piece of the superselection sector which you're not in is by creating bubbles of it, and I'm trying to create the appropriate bubble of it here, okay? So if you want to know about domain walls and you live in the trivial vacuum, if we didn't have gravity, we all know what to do. Create bubbles of it. If you create a big enough bubble and you go near there, it looks just like, to any degree of accuracy you want, the other superselection, the domain wall superselection sector. This is me trying to put the gravity in, although maybe wrongly, and so that's the punchline, okay? That the quasi-localized gravity is meant to be the closer and closer approximation to the true gravity. So I'll stop there, but of course I would like to know what the hell's going on. Thank you.